Hey, everybody. Episode 277, Comedy Film Nerds Podcast.
Also, another international episode.
International episode. Well, I hope you bought beers, because every time...
And shrimp?
No, I wasn't going to make the shrimp joke. No? I was just going to... No, I was making just the beers? Fact... Well, when Will Anderson, who was here last week, was on, he yes. drank beers. And the last time we had a guest drink beers on the show was... CJ Johnson. So yeah. We have the only people who drink beers are Australians, and that's our guest.
And we're out. We're out of beers.
We're out of beers, so you should have brought your own guest. Yeah.
And now it's time to compare each other's knives.
Yeah. I did not make the shrimp joke. That was Chris. I want to go on record. I was referring to an actual thing that happened.
But also a stereotype.
Also a stereotype that you all proved.
Yeah.
The shrimp one, I have yet to see anybody prove. I have never seen dingoes. I have never seen any of these other stereotypes, but the drinking
And the
one.
Smallest guy drank the most beer.
CJ went through like 12 of them and didn't break a sweat. Didn't slur his words.
No.
Didn't. It was really, you guys are impressive.
Well, you've
By the way, this is Steele Saunders, our guest.
You've done a lot of Australian cliches, and you guys are living up to the American cliche of being insensitive to other countries' cultures.
Well, it's not
USA,
my
fault. USA! USA!
It's not my fault you guys don't carry more guns. Yeah,
yeah. Other cultures are babies.
Yeah, they're stupid. Why should I have to learn about something that's not me?
Speak American.
Yeah.
Yeah, hey, why don't get you guys- a boomerang. Those bullets don't come back to you.
Yeah. So.
Which is probably a benefit.
Yes, we are dumb and sensitive Americans. Yeah. But we will still drag you into a war that you didn't really want to be involved with.
So we have a lot of movies to talk about. Speaking of war, Max, we're going to be talking about the war dog movie.
War dog.
Sort of. Inside Out, Bat Kid, and actually some interesting DVDs to talk about. Ex Machina, It Follows, and premiering this week. A lot of cool stuff.
Yeah, some cool trailers came out.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about Comic-Con.
Yeah, I want to thank everybody that came out. I did a Doug Loves Movies at American Comedy Company in San Diego. That was a lot of fun. And, of course, thank you to Rick Myers for having us on the Kung Fu Superhero Kung Fu Extravaganza panel.
Not with the word movie in it.
Not with the word movie.
We were corrected, even though he's showing movies. He took the word movie out of the...
And my Comic-Con thanks is to J.J. Abrams for making all my dreams come true.
Well, we'll definitely be getting into that.
Yeah, we will.
But we want to thank there was a fair amount of Comedy Film Nerds fans at the Kung Fu Extravaganza.
Yeah.
You guys are starting to come every year now. Because
Which is really cool.
Which is really, really
And we,
cool.
of course, recorded an episode in a hotel room with Rick Myers talking about sort of the state of... martial art and kung fu movies. That'll be out in August.
Always fascinating, too.
Always
He's got a lot to say about everything from movies to the Chinese government.
Yeah, it's really great. And there's a really cool movie that we're going to talk about, this Jackie Chan movie that Lionsgate picked up.
Yes.
That was the trailer on that, or not the trailer, but the clip that he showed at Comic-Con was really cool to see. So big shout out to everybody there. All right, let's. Should we get right into some movies?
I think we should. We should
in
definitely
honor of Comic Con. Should we get into the movie that Steele saw?
Yeah, let's let the guests go first.
All right, what did you see, buddy?
I thought you were going to say in honor of Comic Con. Should we watch The Australian Cry again? actually, my movie Bat Kid.
Yeah.
The story for me starts at Comic Con last year because I went to the Bat Kid panel. Mm-hmm. And they had a lot of the people that were involved in the Bat Kid project. I guess we should say that...
It's called Bat Kid Begins is the official
Bat Kid title. Begins, sorry. Right. There is actually going to be a movie called Bat Kid that Julia Roberts is producing.
A narrative?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Oh,
wow.
This is a documentary.
Yeah, so...
Tell everybody who doesn't know what the story is briefly about.
Well, Bat Kid is a little boy, he's about 5 or 6, named Miles. He lives in Anytown, USA, where there's tractors and wheat and, you know, good old classic American stuff. And he is diagnosed with leukemia. And... to get through the leukemia, he really looks to superheroes. He loves dressing up, and when he's dressed up as like Iron Man or Batman or whoever, he feels braver to fight the cancer that he sees as a supervillain. And Make-A-Wish, when they interviewed him about what he wanted to be, he just said, "I wanted to be Batman." And So they decided to do a day of sort of role playing where he was going to be Batman and fight some crime. And it'd just be a little thing, perhaps in a park. And what happens is maybe, and I should just say, I might get choked up just talking about this story.
Right.
Because it was, it's so cool. Like, we've heard all about it in Australia. Yeah. We were following it on Twitter. It was on the news. It turns out they did it in San Francisco, and it just, more and more people heard the story and were touched and wanted to get behind it. And what turned was an entire city role-playing as the city of Gotham. And just like tens of thousand people coming out to support the Bat Kid and cheer him on. And everyone from, is it Hans Zimmer, the composer
right.
mm-hmm. that did the Batman themes, he got involved all the way up to Obama, to, you know, the mayor of San Francisco, the chief of police, and they did this amazing role-playing thing. And the thing about it is that the people in the crowds had this Save Us Bat Kid, and it's sort of this thing of like everyone got together to support this kid, but it was sort of like a, I don't know, it's just very inspirational to how brave this kid was and the way that humans, who are some of the worst things on the planet,
right?
When they're focused in the right direction, they can be like beyond, you know, whatever we could expect out right. of anything on the planet. And it's just, I don't know, it's just such a good story. I can't recommend going to enough. I honestly think, you know, we go see films all the time and, you know, we see superheroes and stuff like that, but this is a movie with like dozens of superheroes that don't have superpowers, but have just gone above and beyond to help this little kid. And I honestly think seeing this movie will make the rest of your life better.
Oh, wow.
Because it's
just quite an endorsement for a movie.
It's just about like,
yeah, but he said that about Mad Max too.
And it's just, it's really full on. It is amazing. And it just shows like if you put really good stuff out there, great stuff can come back. I'm a very cynical person, but I'm also, I get touched very easily by
what's that kindness. Saying? Cynics are just disillusioned optimists or whatever. That's some, I heard some phrase
disappointed
like,
optimist.
Yeah, disappointed optimists. So like, which to me,
they're comedians.
Yeah, they're comedians. Like that's, I think that's part of the comic. We are cynics, and that's why we kind of find the like, oh, well, this is bullshit and everything. But because part of us wants everything to be great,
right?
We think it could be great.
Yeah, and
if people just weren't drunk idiots at a show.
Yeah,
yeah. Like sometimes in the world, especially you know, coming to LA from Australia, like you know, just say like in the traffic, you know, people cut people off, and that inspires more people to cut other people off. And so everyone's blocking everyone on traffic. Do you know what I mean? Like right. on the freeways in LA. Right. And it's brutal. But once you let someone in traffic and they give you a nice wave, that might inspire that person to let someone else in. And this movie is about that, about doing a good thing and then other people seeing a good thing going, I want to do a good thing too. And it just builds into this thing to give this guy an amazing make-a-wish, but also inspiring a city and a planet. You know, we followed it in Australia, and as the movie cover, you know, people fly in because they want to be part of the Bat Kid experience. And I know one of the people involved with it, he went to like Indonesia or something, and people knew about Bat Kid. And it's just, it's a, I think it's a really important film. I don't think the documentary is particularly amazingly made.
Mm-hmm.
But
the spirit of it is amazing.
Yeah.
Well, you can't get away from how great the story is.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. And I went to the panel last year and they had the guy that played Batman and the guy that played the Penguin. The Penguin actually works at Lucasfilm in San Francisco, does special effects and stuff. And I asked him afterwards if he got to meet Miles, the boy. And he said, oh, it breaks my heart, but to keep like it all in character, he has not met him yet.
Oh, wow.
So the parents sort of had said to him and the whole crew that there will come a time, and maybe it's happened now that the film is out. You know, the actual Batkid event, I think, was about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And that they once he just naturally realizes what happened, that they'll all have a big party and get together. But it's tremendous. It's when I went to see it, sadly, the cinema was quite empty. It's on a very limited release.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But like
it's
everyone
a good one to check out like on demand or DVD, something like that.
And there was a Kickstarter and stuff that I supported, and that there's going to be a download of that after the theatrical run finishes. Right. But you know, there was maybe like 20 people in the cinema, and at the end, like everyone just clapped and wiped their tears away. In the Comic-Con panel, that's what I said to the guy that played the Penguin. I said, "Oh man, I was wiping away tears." And he was like, "Oh, you couldn't see everyone was like had tears."
Right.
Because it's just, I don't know, we can do really positive things if we set our minds to it and don't think selfishly. And I think it takes someone's first step to then, you know, for everyone to trust each other and stuff. And, you know, the fact that everyone rallied around this boy, Miles, it's, yeah, it's an amazing movie. So just do the rest of your life a favor and see this movie, and it might inspire you to, you know, just live a little bit freer and kinder and a little bit less cynical.
Well, you can't get a better endorsement than that.
I don't know. Sounds like bullshit.
Yeah.
No, that's great. And I think, honestly, that's that to me, that's what a good documentary can do. I mean, is
change hearts and minds.
Change hearts and minds and get you to sort of almost like take an action when you leave there, whatever it is. It's whatever you watch the documentary fed up, like, okay, well, I'm gonna
eat less sugar.
Yeah, I'm gonna eat less sugar. I'm gonna start reading labels or mm-hmm. or whatever this is. And I think that's great. The filmmaker is a woman by the name of Dana Nachman, and she's also done The Human Experiment, Love, Hate, Love, and Witch Hunt. So I've heard good things about this, and I'm excited to see it. And it's the good thing. While the documentary is rarely do they get the wide release we would all like to see, the good thing is because of this digital and Netflix and Hulu and all these places,
you can finally see these.
You can. There is this sort of renaissance of documentaries where you get to watch them. Like, where else would you find? Like, before all this stuff existed, it was so hard to find. Yeah. First of all, not as many were being made, because it was just too expensive. And secondly, where could you find them?
Then Art House, and it'd be there for a week.
It'd be there for a week, and if you missed it, good luck.
Yeah,
you better
good luck finding
hope
it.
Hope it comes out on DVD,
right.
And then
eventually,
where, and it's always. But now it's like all you got to do is go on Netflix, and there's a new great documentary to watch, like right. almost every week.
They're doubling down on documentaries.
Yeah, because look at the payout on them. I mean, mm-hmm. the budgets are always by comparison are dirt cheap. And they, especially if it's a story like this, that's something about an event that we all know about, literally all over the world, you're absolutely going to watch that.
Right.
Hmm. And from what I know, all the profits from the film go to Fight Leukemia. So
good, wow. Good.
That's good.
So you're doubling down. So yeah, I just left so positive and so giving. So to balance that out, I just started thinking about Jurassic World again.
It's funny.
Hang off the hill!
It's funny. You and Will both really did not. So we can go into that a little bit. Why did you hate it? Briefly, why did you hate it so much?
20 years ago, dinosaurs got loose on the park and killed a lot of people. Let's have some foolproof plans to not do that. Let's not work out that while the new dinosaur is growing, yeah, we better make that a bit taller. No, you build the tall thing. You don't. And he did. That dinosaur got out. Spoiler alert, everyone, but it's been out for a little bit, and it's Comedy Film Nerd. Should have seen it on the first night. The dinosaur got out by doing the old hide under the bed in the prison cell trick. Like, if that didn't work, was he going to use his tail to try get the keys off the other side of the wall?
All right, fair enough.
No, what would happen is they would learn that he was spliced with rabbit DNA and he could have jumped over.
Oh, no.
Oh, my God.
No, they put rabbits in DNA.
Wow, we need to get some coherent storyline DNA in that dinosaur. And the bit where all the pterodactyls came down and massacred everyone, which was awesome.
That was great.
And I, you know, I listened to both the episodes and the, you know, it was spectacular and it was super fun, the action scenes. But listen, if I was responsible for pterodactyls coming down and killing several hundred people, including my personal assistant, I wouldn't then just have a wet t-shirt contest and start flirting with the handsome man around. Like, that is no time for flirting when you have cost the lives of hundreds.
Oh, I don't know. Is there ever a wrong?
That's the new corporate culture, though,
yeah,
Steve.
But I think, yeah. There's, and is there a bad time for a wet t-shirt contest? Yeah. You know what I mean?
You got to compartmentalize.
Yeah, a funeral pterodactyl
still
attack.
Still got a job to do.
Yeah, you know what I mean. We got to move the needle. We got to get the spot. We got to get the investors happy.
Got to raise the stakes.
Yeah, the shareholders. You know, I hate to be a dick.
The other thing that really stressed me out was the guy, the director, Colin something something.
Sure.
He's rumored to be a potential director on a Star Wars film.
Mm.
And that, you know, it's like...
Well, go back to Safety Not Guaranteed and you'll feel better.
No, Safety Not Guaranteed is my thoughts about the whole thing entirely. It is not guaranteed. And it was like... it was like hanging out with, you know, a real, you know, sketchy guy that sleeps around that's then like... eyeing off your sister.
Right.
Like, it's just like, yeah, do what you want with your dinosaurs. Don't come near my lightsabers, buddy. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good to know. That's good lunatic logic. that's outstanding. All right. What do you want to talk about next?
Let's talk about Max, this movie. Now, this movie was about the combat veteran dog. This is a kids movie. It's interesting to see. It's very rarely that you see a PG war movie. Mm-hmm. So it's about dogs in combat, and they're still serving, and they're trainers.
Isn't it loosely based on a true story?
No, I thought it was, but it's not.
Okay.
Because it
I
even
have
said
heard
at the
some
end,
of these stories.
Yes,
but this isn't based on it.
No, and the reason is because only the very beginning has to have anything to do with being in a war or with the dog.
The rest of the time he's back here.
The rest of the time he's back here, okay. And then it becomes like a Lassie movie of the week kind of thing. So it really missed the mark here, because ultimately, if you're making a movie about dogs in war, wouldn't that be the most interesting part of your story? Like, to see how these dogs are trained, how they bond with their handlers, and what they actually do out in the field. To me, that was absolutely fascinating. And it's literally like 5-10 minutes of the movie.
Oh.
And then once the dog gets back, because this happens in the trailer, the handler gets killed, and then the brother, who is estranged from his family, has to raise the dog. And then you see the beats coming in, like, the Lifetime movie. Then he, like, you know, meets the girl who helps him. And but then it goes into this weird kind of, like, almost like a PG-level thriller where he, like, gets involved with, like, arms dealers. And there's, like, this weird kind of stuff that's going on. And he and the dog have to, like, solve this rather large and dangerous crime. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost, well, now we're Scooby-Doo. Where is this movie going? And I think this movie was a real missed opportunity because, you know, it's being sold as kind of like a war dog movie, and it really wasn't. This is why it was only in the theaters for like a week or two.
Right.
It really was...
Well,
I don't even think it was
the movie poster is best friend hero Marine.
Right.
And he's wearing like battle gear in a war zone.
Right. So it's, you would think that'd be more than 5-10 minutes of the film.
It sounds like a missed opportunity to not make a film.
Yeah.
You guys could have not made this.
I'll tell you, I was really on board with the premise. Like, I kind of like this idea of, you know, even keep it PG. That's fine.
Sure.
But show more of what the relationship would be with the dogs and the soldiers. And, you know, and even, like, if the dog came home halfway through the movie where you saw what he was through, like the dog has, even dogs can get post-traumatic stress disorder, and be like, but I only saw him in one scene and he was walking, you know, he just found some arms, he sniffed out some arms. But the thing that really kind of went off balance is when it got into like this weird kind of thriller and dog training, and then his brother, who was the Marine that got killed, is the soldier that was stationed with him comes back, and he was like, this is spoiler alert, because I doubt any of you are really going to see this film. Halfway through the movie, you realize that he's the bad guy, and he's the one actually doing the arms dealing. So in this weird, small Texas town, there's all these arms dealers that no one can stop except a boy and his dog and his two friends. So it gets...
Sounds realistic to me.
Yeah, it gets really, really in this weird territory that like it didn't have to go in. Like, when you have, you know, a brother that was killed in action, and he happened to be part of the dog unit, he was the dog's handler and trainer, there's so much rich and fertile story there. You don't have to put in this weird Scooby-Doo chase, you know, towards the end.
Right.
I think that's what the movie really should have focused on more, because it's also the most fascinating. And I still, like, I left this movie going, well, I still know nothing about, like, what the process is and what the dogs do in combat and all that stuff. So I want to see the movie that I thought I was going to see. I still want to see that movie. Like, even if it's a documentary, something, I would love to see that. So
I'd like to see the training scene, like a nice training montage where in training there's all the dogs, and the first dog, they throw a grenade and the dog goes and chases it.
And blows up,
and all the other dogs go, "Oh, this is pretty serious. We've all learned a lesson there."
And that's how they learn in dog boot camp.
Yeah. And so, who are they fighting? Are they go to war with the cats? Or
yes. Yeah, because then the dog slowly comes out of his post-traumatic shell and becomes a companion. And then, but the dog knows who the bad guys are. That's the thing. It's like, you know, why is he barking? You know,
it's like, him.
It's always the It's always that no one believes the dog except the little boy.
Yeah. I think where my fiance lives, Jackie, where we're staying, there's a dog downstairs that has numb flashbacks every morning at about 5 a.m.
Just starts barking.
Yeah.
I think from what you sound like I've learned more about dog training in war zones when I went to that Air Force base in North Dakota.
That's what it sounds like.
You learned in this entire movie.
For sure. The other thing I noticed too is like, I was so, like, honestly, the trailer had me tearing up. I thought this was going to be a really heartfelt, like, really emotional story. Did not tear up once through the entire film. I was like, really? Is that where we're going? Like, whoever put the trailer together thought, all right, well, I'm going to have to put some emotional beats here that aren't really in the film. and like I said, it was not the movie I thought I was going to see. So, if you have a dog war movie in development, if you're a filmmaker, this movie did not ruin your chances. I'm just saying, you can still make your movie, and I will still go see it. So,
all right. Well, I finally got around to seeing Inside Out.
Yes.
And I thought it was okay.
Ah, okay. You weren't as excited as the rest of us were.
Can you just get me up to speed with which movie?
This is Inside Out. It's the animated Pixar movie where it's about a young girl and all of her emotions. You see all of her emotions in her head. Anger, joy, disgust, fear. Maybe I'm leaving one out.
Joy.
Anger, joy, disgust, fear.
Oh. No, I think that's it.
I had fingers crossed for lost.
So it was okay.
Now that's interesting, because it really resonated with me. What was it about you that kind of made you only lukewarm about it?
I was about to say that.
Yeah.
The middle part of the movie is all Amy Poehler. I mean, she's the voice of joy. So it's all Amy Poehler and sadness running around their loss. We got to get back home. So it was just too much of this
Amy
Poehler from Parks and Rec running around trying to find everything. And, oh, we're going to go there. And after a while, I'm like, well, I know that route won't work. Or that we'll just need to get to this. And I know that'll stop or be blocked or... So the end of the movie, without any giving up any spoilers, I enjoyed it. The overall message was decent. You know, the payoff at the end was really cool and funny. So overall, it was okay. But the middle of the movie, I was like, oh man, this is why. When I saw the trailer, I was not that excited for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the middle of the movie, I was like, oh, this is why I didn't want to go see this. And the showtime's only lined up for that. I was either going to see that or the Amy Winehouse documentary. And boy, I don't know if I could watch. I'm sure that's a good documentary, but like this tragic story of somebody whose addiction killed them. I was like, man, I was just editing earbuds for 7 hours all day. I needed to watch something a little lighter.
So is it like a Herman's Head type scenario?
Yeah, for kids. I mean, yeah. I was watching it going, you know, I see why my niece loved this. I see why Bella loved this. And I was like, okay, it's at the end, it's okay. It's decent. It's just Pixar sets the bar really high.
Well, that's true.
And yeah. And there were some funny adult stuff in there that I enjoyed.
And the Chinatown joke.
The Chinatown joke was really great. There's a bunch of cool little things. You know, there's cool stuff like that. But I was like, this isn't like Up, Toy Story. I put them far above this.
Interesting.
Personally, because wow. I just was like, I was like, well, great. If I was a 10 or 11 year old girl, then this would be awesome. But I'm not. It just felt, it's just too much of that.
Have you seen it yet, Steele?
No, I have not. But that thought is what I think when I get out of the shower and see myself in the mirror.
Yeah, yeah, it's a great thought. You know what I mean? Like you.
If I was a 10 or 11 year old girl, this would be awesome.
Things would be going much better
yeah,
right now.
Things would be great. I mean, yeah. So it's okay. I'm not shitting on it. It just didn't. I kind of was like, all right.
So I think we split a little bit on that one, but yeah, that's sure. That's interesting that you didn't resonate with it, because I know Laura really liked it too, and Laura and I have had some opposite reactions on movies too. But yeah, so be it. I mean, one of these movies, like we always say, it's an emotional reaction. Like you either completely resonate with it or you didn't. But it's interesting that you didn't turn it all the way off. You just thought, well, it's good. Like, but you didn't like hate
right
it.
Right when
or
I was
anything.
Starting to turn it off, mm-hmm. it became interesting again.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll give him credit for that. And yeah, you know. How was that?
All right, fair enough.
Why do I want to relive that shit from my childhood? all right, so let's get into upcoming films. All right, so you were at Comic-Con 2, Steel, and of course we have these new trailers to come out. I should say this at the top. I do not like, when I'm excited to see a movie, I don't want to watch a bunch of trailers. I don't want to learn more about it. I want to have that experience on the big screen. Like, I didn't want to watch this first Star Wars trailer until I saw it in front of a movie on the big screen, which I waited for, and whatever it was, Avengers or whatever they put it in front of here.
Mm-hmm.
So these new ones coming out, I'm not going to watch them. I did the same thing with all the Dark Knight films. They're like, oh, there's a new, I was like, you're telling me too much. I don't want to go into this movie knowing everything that's going to happen. I don't want to do that.
All right. Well, Steele and I will talk about these two and then you can
ruin it.
Comment.
No. All right. I get what you mean. I understand. But if there's one thing I've been taught in the past 5 days is in J.J. Abrams we trust. The guy is lighting a fire of imagination without revealing anything about the films.
Now, this new trailer, to be specific, because you haven't seen it, it's more of a behind the scenes, and it shows a little bit of the making of the film. But I agree with Steele. I don't think it gives anything away.
He's very secretive, and he's doing all these unprecedented things in Star Wars, like the actual novelization isn't coming out until the day after the film's released and only digitally. And then the actual printed novel doesn't come out till January, just so there's no leaks.
Oh, wow.
Which is insane. So I think the word is that, you know, he's had a slight bit of tension with, you know, Disney and Lucasfilm because he wants it under wraps, and he's a Star Wars fan, and
more than Star Trek, which he's made clear.
Yeah, well, he made, you know, a Star Wars Star Trek film, you know.
That's a good point.
Essentially. But so I did the camp out to see the panel, and
you did the Hall H camp out.
Yeah.
How many days did you have to camp out?
Just one, but I had like friends that did the two that held a spot for me.
Wow.
And it was the best time. Like, I've had the best few days of my life. It was amazing. I
think that's awesome.
Like, I've posted up, like, if you go to the, I do a Star Wars podcast called Steel Wars. If you go to the Facebook, I've posted up tons of photos and videos from inside the panel. And I felt so bad. And this is why I totally trust J.J. Abrams. Is because I was pretty annoyed that the panel was at 5:30 and we were burning an entire day watching like Game of Thrones panels, Walking Dead.
Because you can't leave. Once you leave the hall, you lose your spot.
You can get a toilet pass, but you have to get back in by the time that panel, before it finishes.
So there's even rules for the toilet pass.
Yeah. So I would actually leave and go to another panel and then go, oh yeah, I've got to get back and come back in. Because we had a massive squad.
Right.
And JJ sent donuts and coffees down to the first like 500 people in line in morning. So we had breakfast on JJ.
Nice.
I've kept my little Dunkin' Donuts sugar sachet. It's my JJ sugar. And so I was really annoyed. I'm like, this is Lucasfilm and Disney. Like, I don't know. Do they have any pull in the entertainment industry? Could they not get this panel done in the morning? Now, do you guys hear what happened after the panel?
No.
Mm-mm.
The greatest thing ever happened. Now, so the panel was amazing. They brought out the new three heroes. Mm-hmm. Then they brought out the sort of Dark Crystal-esque character that was in one of the Omaze videos, and he's like a bizarre creature with his nose flares up. He's like a practical real life puppet. Mm-hmm. He's carrying a bunch of other creatures that are all moving. He walked out on stage, knocked over JJ Abrams' sign, and then walked back in. Then they brought out the evil guys. So you had Gwendolyn Christie, you had Adam Driver, and then like Chris Hardwick was hosting, and he actually did a really good job. And just they bring out Carrie Fisher. She comes out and kills. She's right. The best.
Right.
Like, she's just destroying. Then Mark Hamill comes out. I'm freaking out.
Right.
Now, there's no more mics on the table. And all I wanted for my 24 hours of lining up more, 24 hours of lining up and then waiting another day, was I wanted either new footage or Harrison Ford. Now, they showed this behind the scenes clip, which 6,500 people in tears.
It's fantastic. And I will say about it too, like if you've seen the original trilogy in the movie theaters, and that's part of your kind of growing up part of your life, which is for most of us, it hits you in such a nostalgic way that you can't help but be moved by what you've just seen. And it's literally just behind the scenes, but J.J. Abrams sets it up where, like, you know, we know what you guys want. We know what you're looking for, and this is it. Yes, we're in the digital age, but this is the way these movies were made. We're going to be shooting them on film. We have practical effects, and he shows them to you in these behind-the-scenes clips, and it was amazing. It, like, it makes you can't wait to see this film.
It's narrated by Mark Hamill. It's amazing. There's the things that they've rigged up from things you knew back in the 80s. The way they're redoing it so that you don't need effects. Like, there's no more of this business of like getting hit by asteroids and everyone's like, all right, run to the right. Now run to the left. It's insane. So then Mark Hamill's talking for a little bit and I notice that there is a mic on the screen, but it's not on the stand. So they haven't put it on the stand. So everyone thinks there's no one else coming. And then Chris Hardwick goes to J.J. Abrams. So tell us about, you know, how's Harrison? Is he all right? And this is a weird thing. Being a comedian, I can tell a comedian doing bad acting. My fiance Jackie was sort of like, she told me afterwards that she was like, oh, he's not going to come. And I'm like, really? That to me was the biggest
setup.
I was like, that is... you know, that is like Seinfeld level acting. Right? And J.J. Abrams goes, why don't we ask him? And I've never been happier in my life. Like, I've got tears in my eyes now. It was the best. He came out, sat down, and this is why it trips out. Now, Harrison Ford has... You know, we don't know Harrison Ford, but his image to a fan is he's a bit of a curmudgeon. He's right. Sort of like, yeah, Star Wars, whatever.
Right.
He came out and he still got it, by the way. Oh, my God. He can raid my arc any day. And
That's an off-putting.
Now, so he goes to speak and the crowd is just going crazy. You know, Harrison Ford hasn't done any fan-related Star Wars things since 1983.
Right.
I think maybe the one thing he has done is he signed a few plaques on some $5,000 Millennium Falcon replicas.
Right.
I'm pretty sure that's the only thing he's ever done. And he goes to talk and we're all cheering and he gets choked up.
Wow.
Then we get choked up. Then he gets more choked up again. Then Maggie laughed. She's such a trooper. That's a really good Simpsons reference, guys. But I think he just turned 73.
Yeah. Today? He's in his 70s.
Yeah. So his birthday was today or yesterday. And, you know, he sort of said, you know, Star Wars was what started my career. I'd quit acting and Star Wars got me back into it. And like, I'm, you know, projecting a little bit, but I think he's, you know, at the end of his career and he's come full circle. And I sort of think that when you get that old and you've got this huge body of work and you begin to accept.
Well, the fact that he said yes to this new movie, I'm sure somewhere along the way, I don't know, pretend to know him or mind read or whatever, but I'm sure somewhere along the way he went, you know what? I'm going to just make my peace with the fact that I'm Han Solo. Mm. Like, I've heard so many actors who have those sort of roles that they like wanted eventually. And at some point in their career went, enough, like I'm fucking done with it. Like,
well, he just went through that with Indiana Jones.
Right.
He just did another one of those a couple years ago.
I think he just said, I mean, like there was the I Am Not Spock book that Leonard Nimoy put out. And then he put out a book later saying, I am Spock. And I think all of those types of people in those crazy iconic roles have a point in their life where they have to go, I cannot change this. Like, I remember talking to...
It's almost like coming full circle. Like
it is.
They come back.
Well, I remember talking to Christopher Knight. He was a contestant on the game show Cram that I host. We did a Brady Bunch. He was Peter Brady. So him and Susan Olsen, who played Cindy. And I remember at a press party for Game Show Network, I asked him, I said, look, I know you get this question all the time. He goes, no, it's a fair question. And he told me, he had done the same thing. I'm done with this. I'm fucking, one more person comes up to me and says, pork chops and applesauce. He's like, I'm going to knock him out. He was out of show business. He was doing software stuff. And he was actually in Australia. And the Brady Bunch play, the stage play, had come to Australia.
You know, you could almost go to a Comic Con and sign as one of the Brady kids.
I
know.
There's a photo. I heard that. I made a joke about that early on in my career. There's a photo on the set of me and him. I got to find it somewhere where literally he looks more like my brother than my older brother does. My older brother has red hair and blue eyes. It doesn't look like me. But he talked about that, about going to Australia, and they were doing that stage play, and someone got a hold of him and said, hey, would you come down to the play? And he's like, oh, fucking all right. And then he told this great story of, they do the show. When the show's over, the cast comes out and takes a stage bow. And they go, you know, but we, none of us would be here if it wasn't for the cast, and one of them's here. And light on him, whole audience stands up. They're all, and having kind of a similar moment of what you're talking about with Harrison Ford. And he goes, oh, well, that's when I went, I'm Peter Brady. Mm. It's totally okay. He goes, it's in the room before I get there, so I'm not even going to fight it. I mean, I heard Lisa Marie Presley talk about that. Mm. She had to finally, it wasn't until she was in like her 30s of like, I'm Elvis's daughter.
And going back to the Batkid film, it's like, even if you want to move on as an artist and as an actor, it's like, you did this thing that makes millions of people really happy.
It's important. I mean, it's like, you did something that
it goes beyond that with Star Wars.
Star Wars is an emotional...
It's an emotional experience. It's part of our childhoods in such a large way. It wasn't even just watching a movie. We all had the toys and the models and the playsets and the lunchboxes. It literally was a part of our lives.
But it also wasn't... It was more than just those things, because we all had the lunchboxes and the toys with plenty of other things.
Sure.
That we grew out of. Now, part of it is, you know, they rebooted them in the 90s and then did those three educational movies that came out.
Those documentaries?
Those three. Well, they use them. I think I've talked about this before. Those three movies that are really informative for intergalactic trade tariffs.
Yes.
That econ majors at the University of Naboo study.
And what you can make in a computer.
Sure. Great. The thing about what I think that makes Star Wars resonate more is and George Lucas implemented all of these, the Force, and this is like Eastern philosophy. Like he, you know, the Yoda is supposed to be Buddha. He was modeled after.
Well,
Buddha.
Go watch. You must have seen Hidden Fortress, obviously. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's, you know, that was his inspiration for the film.
Yeah. Jedi's are samurai. Mm-hmm. And the Force and all that stuff. Like, I remember my mom, you know, big hippie, after we all went to that movie when I was a kid, afterwards she goes, wow, they're finally talking about your higher mind and all of this stuff. She goes, I mean, as a kid, I didn't realize that. But then the more you watch it, that some of that stuff resonates with you. Mm. And it is very simple. I mean, good and evil is talked about all the time in movies, but the way they presented it between the dark side of the Force.
Interconnectivity, all that stuff.
Yeah, and how... you know, Luke Skywalker is told by Yoda and Ben Kenobi, Darth cannot be turned. You are wrong. And Luke is right because, like, love prevails. Mm. I mean, those things are amazing.
But even back to Star Wars, at the start of the film, it's the message of, like, Luke Skywalker wants to go do this stuff and he's putting it off because there's another harvest. There's other stuff to do. Right. He's looking to the twin sunset, the theme's playing, and he's thinking, I wish I was doing that. And then I think one of the things a lot of people take from Star Wars is that binary sunset scene of longing to go do something. And it's like, stop making excuses.
Go.
Get on and do what you have to do. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Stop. Go do it. Like, don't say, I don't have time to start painting or learn to dance.
And they'll find someone else to work the harvest.
Don't use farming as an excuse. That's what you're saying.
Okay, so...
because your aunt and uncle are going to get turned into toast.
Now, a definite fanboy highlight, and from someone that does a comedy Star Wars podcast, I was a little bit, hey, you're stealing my gimmick. Mark Hamill, Carrie Fisher, and Harrison Ford all riffing about incest in the Skywalker family. The best. So they show
it's like
clip.
Like watching the Lannisters.
Yeah. They show the clip. They take questions. I was so fulfilled.
Right.
Like, I've been looking forward to this panel since last year. Like, me and Jackie were, like, when we were at Comic-Con last year, it was like next year's Star Wars year, we're going to camp out. It's going to be the best fun. And I made so many friends, in that line that, like, we're friends forever now. Do you know what I mean? And it was like, it was so good. This is the best day ever. Literally the best day ever.
Now, you said something happened after the panel, too?
So, Chris Hardwick goes, this is the end of the panel, but, you know, we can't just end it like this. And J.J. Abrams goes, does everyone like Star Wars music? Spoiler alert, everyone likes Star Wars.
Oh, okay. No, that'd be great if people were like, well,
no. Make them silent.
John who? And I was sort of thinking, oh, they're gonna debut the new theme. You know, they're going to play new John Williams music. This is going to be awesome.
Right.
Great. This is going to be this is the best panel of all time. Do you guys want to go listen to some Star Wars music? Everyone wants to go listen to some Star Wars music. But I'm like, what? Go listen. I don't understand what that means. Do you guys want to come with me now and go listen to some Star Wars music? Everyone's cheering. But I'm sort of thinking, oh, there's going to be some ticket giveaway. It's going to be a schmoz. Like, you know, there was at the Funko party the night before, there was stories of they were giving away, you know, limited edition Funkos. A little girl got her arm broken. It's a horrible scene. And Comic-Con has got two halves. It's that materialistic limited edition, let's get it on eBay half. And then there's let's get together with a bunch of like-minded people
who love all this
and get and put everything aside, our inhibitions, and let's just have a real good time.
Yeah.
And the first time I went to Comic-Con, that's why I come back across the world to see it, you know, every time I can, is the vibe and the positivity and just the joy. And I was like, oh, that's, you know, I want to go, but it's going to be tough. And, you know, I'm in a group of 9 people and we were forged. Right. We were an army by then. Yeah. After that, you know, you do a day and a half in a line together and, you know, you're brothers. And JJ said, now, here's the deal. Everyone can come. Don't push. Don't shove. I promise you, everyone can come. There's no benefit to being first or last. Everyone can come. We're going to go have a Star Wars concert together. So we all walk out. Oh, it was the nerd Oprah, everyone gets a car moment.
Oh.
We were cheering, hugging, high-fiving, but having no idea what was going on. Mm-hmm. But it was, I think mainly it was like, we get more. Like, party's still, we're not all going to walk out and go our separate ways. Mm-hmm. There's something else going to happen. So what happened? We all walked out. We all were given this like Star Wars laminated badge thing, which I will keep for the rest of my life. Mm-hmm. We all walked 6,500 people outside of Hall H down to the water to the San Diego where the symphony plays. They've got this big stage and there's Star Wars music playing. There's stuff on the screen. 6,500 people get given a light up Hasbro lightsaber with a limited edition sticker on it.
Oh my God.
What?
And the San Diego Orchestra. Well, first of all, there's an video introduction from John Williams saying, hey guys, I hope you enjoyed the panel. I'm so glad you're here to celebrate the music of Star Wars. I'm busy working on the new score, so I can't be there. But these guys, they're the best in the business. You're going to love it. And the whole cast...
I've got chills. Yeah, I've got chills when you're describing this.
The whole cast comes out. Harrison Ford comes out happily holding up a toy lightsaber. Hugging Mark Hamill, having the best time ever.
Talk about making peace with your characters.
That's amazing.
And last person on the planet I'd expect to hold a lightsaber. Yeah,
right.
Because
he would use a blaster.
I think he'd... I 3 years ago, I thought he'd rather put a blaster in his mouth.
Hokey religions, old man. I don't know.
And so the orchestra plays. They play maybe 10 different Star Wars themes, all synced up to these massive montages from the film.
And then the music from Wicked, right?
That would be like...
And when they play the Imperial theme, just red lightsabers held up. Star Wars fans are the best.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? And it ended with, you know, the main Star Wars theme and an insane fireworks show.
Wow, really?
Jesus, that's
the best ending for a panel ever.
It was like J.J. Abrams, Andy Kaufman, like Comic-Con.
Well, it also what he's doing
in a good way,
in the best way. What he's doing too is, and this is the sort of the dilemma you're talking about at Comic-Con is, you know, we all love and go down there, but sometimes any of us fans feel like we're just kind of herded in. Go buy your shit. Like they don't care. Like sometimes you feel like, well, they don't care.
I don't want to wait 24 hours to go to one panel.
No, I don't want to fucking do that. But you know what? If you do, you get a lightsaber, you get donuts and coffee, and you get a special show. And it's just like that's
just for you.
Just for you. And that's the kind of thing when you do that, then fans go, I absolutely love this.
Now let's backtrack around to me bitching about why is the panel at 5:30?
Right. So there can be
fireworks. You can't have fireworks at noon.
That's amazing.
And that is why in JJ we trust.
That's an awesome story, dude.
Even the panels. Even the panels. What he's doing.
Well, before we get into DVD and stuff, we've talked about this, but since Steel is here, we are still trying to put together, and it looks like it's very reasonably going to happen, where Chris and I are going to fly out to Australia because we will see the movie 36 hours in advance because you guys are getting it on the 17th. So we will go to a 12:01 a.m. on Thursday morning, the 17th, watch it, and then you're working on finding a venue. So around 3 o'clock, the three of us will record a Steel Wars CFN mashup and we'll both release it. So you guys will hear a Star Wars spoiler ep before anyone else.
A Star Wars celebration spoiler ep. And yes. I've always talked, you know, we talk about this, doing this podcast all the time on the Steel Wars podcast, and I'd be fascinated either way, if it's good or bad, the film, like to like go directly and, you know, to podcast straight after it and just let your emotions run free. Right. But I am so sure I this is going to be great. I like, and if it's not, what an audio document of a man's heartbreaking.
I think it's going to be great, and I think we're going to have this awesome celebration at 3 a.m. in Melbourne, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's going to be, I think it's going to be fantastic. The more I think of, because what you're saying, like, while yes, I don't want to watch anything, I don't want to spoil anything, but when I hear these things, I go, okay, I think it's going to be great. I just think there's too many good ingredients. I think it's going to be great, but
we're going to try our best to make it happen.
All right, guys, we're going to try to make this happen.
One thing I haven't told you. So that's Wednesday night, Thursday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Saturday, a couple days later, getting married.
What?
Oh, congratulations.
No way. Where's the wedding?
It's a huge week.
Is the wedding in Melbourne?
In Melbourne, yeah. And what I'm really, you know, it's going to be...
I thought for a second you actually said wake. I said wake.
And yeah, so we're, and part of that is on, we're staying in a, you know, a fancy hotel in the city the next day and going to get massages and then go to the gold class and see it all again.
Wow.
That's so great, dude.
So pretty much have your December planned.
Yeah.
December's big. All right. Well, we'll come out for the movie part of it.
Yeah. Top that, Santa. Hey.
All right. DVDs this week.
Well, I wanted to talk real quick about the Batman versus Superman trailer because that was also a big part of Comic-Con and a huge reaction to it. And when I saw this trailer, I was actually surprised at what I actually liked about it. I was not surprised about what looked ridiculous and horrible about it. But what it's interesting. I was really against the way Lex Luthor was being portrayed.
Mm-hmm.
And when I saw the trailer, I realized, okay, well, maybe I'm going to be open to this interpretation of Lex Luthor, because you may, in this digital day and age, a supervillain would be running a tech company, thinking about ways to maybe take over the world, but he would run something like Facebook and have a heart of stone.
Right.
This is really, so I kind of can see this interpretation of Lex Luthor a little bit now that I think it was Jesse Eisenberg, I believe.
Sure.
that's right, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And, but here's the thing that was completely ridiculous. First of all, Superman, again, has no dialogue. You know, apparently this is a Superman that never talks. They could not be getting the character of Superman more incorrect. But I think Ben Affleck is kind of taking it upon himself to get Batman correct. So the clips of Batman I actually kind of liked. I'm like, okay, well, I could see him being angry and doing all this and possibly coming out of retirement. But and then the trailer just gets crowded. Like, okay, well, now we have Batman. We have Superman. Okay, we just saw Lex Luthor. Wait, now Wonder Woman's here. Like, who else is going to be in this, you know, movie? So you already know it's going to be a mess. It's already too much. Mm-hmm. And hey, here's the thing. Batman and Superman, that's a pretty good movie. You know, that's two people that we could, you know, two, three,
I don't know. Are those
watch.
Two characters big enough, though? You know what I mean?
I don't know if they could carry a whole
Batman
film.
Batman and Superman enough to carry a movie?
Jesus. So I'm watching this and I'm thinking, like, I think this is going to be the kind of movie where the stuff that Zack Snyder gets right will be small, but he will get some stuff right. And the stuff that he's going to get wrong is just going to sink the entire film. It's going to be too crowded.
Right.
The character of Superman is completely wrong.
Steele, you're going to get married in December. That's like saying the cake is going to be made of fucking dog shit and the flowers are going to be like, you know, dead cat skins. But you know what? The music at the wedding.
It's going to be fantastic.
It's going to be fantastic.
No, you're getting the metaphor wrong. I was like thinking, my week that week is like that Superman versus Batman trailer.
It's got too much stuff.
It's got too much in it. Yeah.
But I've never picked up a Superman or a Batman comic. I've seen every film. The only comics I read are Star Wars comics. And so I go in and enjoy these Avengers and X-Men films without the baggage of knowing like, the first teaser, I was like, oh, this is, I don't know, it's just glum or something. It didn't help that it came out the same week as the Star Wars teaser. But I found this new trailer as a, you know, someone on the sidelines, I was like, oh, this is looking pretty good. This is exciting. Mind you, Lex Luthor looks like he's doing his best Heath Ledger impression.
There's something weird. Yeah, for sure. I kind of like the different spin on it. Like, this is like what if Lex Luthor existed now, probably what he would be.
Mm.
But I really think that it's like, you know, the world turns. The whole point of Superman, even in the name, the Uber Man, the Overman, mm-hmm. even when you get into Nietzsche and all the other things, he's the epitome of the way humanity should be, better than ourselves. Mm-hmm. And you start this weird, dark Superman who doesn't really. He's conflicted about saving people, and I'm like, well, now you've made a dark Superman fighting a dark Batman. It doesn't. Mm. No one cares. I mean, and also the history between like the characters is all completely gone. So it makes no sense.
This sounds like you should just watch Bat Kid.
Yeah, go see Bat Kid. I'm sure the city that they recreated would probably be more referential to the comics than this next film.
But the one thing I want to ask about it is, because I haven't read any of the comics and stuff, and I'm sure it's covered there a lot, I've only seen the films, the thing how Superman is actually being analyzed as an alien and should he be here and the government's getting involved. I found that very interesting, and I'm sure it's been, you know, it's been in like comics and stuff, but from someone that hasn't read any of that, that spin on the reaction, like maybe more of a real life reaction to a Superman being on the planet, I found as a concept, and and it might be a very tired concept in the literature.
It's definitely been explored.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
So I was, definitely sparked, you know, I would have gone to see it anyway on the first night, but I was sort of like, oh, yeah, this is actually, the concepts of it are quite interesting. Now, is this have anything to do with the Dark Knight? This is a completely different storyline.
Trying to set up the like their version of the Marvel universe. They're going to throw all these characters in, and then they're going to get spin-off movies, and then they're going to ultimately end up in a Justice League movie.
Okay, so
it's a plan.
So that the Dark Knight trilogy is like a separate
universe.
Yeah, a separate canon and stuff like that. See, as a Star Wars fan, all this comic book storylines and reboots is. It's very confusing, guys.
I do not blame you, sir.
That's a completely reasonable reaction. So,
speaking of reasonable reactions, Paul Blart Mall Cop 2 is on DVD, guys.
I don't know anyone who's seen it. I would love to
run,
get
don't
your
walk.
Take. If anyone has seen it, please put on the message boards what you think. And I would love to hear if somebody saw it by accident or somebody they were forced. Like, what's the situation that you actually ended up seeing this film?
I think your advice, it's for Mall Cop 2, it should be the opposite. For a Mall Cop, it should be walk.
Don't run.
Very slowly.
Walk in an orderly fashion. These floors have just been cleaned. So go get your copy of Mall Cop 2. Yeah, I'm excited for it. I saw him bump into things 4 times in the trailer.
Just in the trailer. So you know what you're in for.
Oh, so you've got to have at least 16 bumps.
Only going to give you a taste of the bumps in the trailer.
God, there's probably at least 16 to 20 bumps and banks.
Plus 4 to 6 full pratfalls.
Oh, God. I don't know if you guys know this. he's a little overweight and kind of frumpy.
A little clumsy, too.
It's good stuff. It's like that movie, The Fockers. Did you know Fockers is actually supposed to be a naughty word? Did you know that? Yeah. Yeah, it's a good thing. Speaking of other sequels, second best exotic Marigold Hotel.
CJ Johnson did a nice review of the site on this. He said, if you like the first one, it's more of the same.
I'm going to see this on a plane. When I fly to Australia one of these times, either for earbuds or Star Wars, and I'm going to enjoy it. It's going to be great.
And
the rules on a long-haul flight of films, suddenly sci-fi remakes become instant classics.
Yeah, I watched RoboCop on the way back from Japan.
I've seen a bunch of movies like, oh, wow. Or there's always a movie like that never... Like, when did this thing make it into a theater?
Right, I don't remember this ever coming out.
Ever coming out, but I'll watch it because I'm somewhere over Fiji.
Because I'm trapped in a seat for 12 hours.
I'm in a tube.
Yeah.
I'm always like, oh, yeah, I saw the car from that at Comic-Con. It's always one of those films.
And Ex Machina. Ooh. No, this is one I really wanted to see, but I didn't get a chance to. So I'm really looking forward to catching it on that.
It's a great film. It's good sci-fi. It's like I said when the movie came out. The AI story and what ifs are really cool. It's a really cool take on this. It's, in my opinion, it's one of the better versions of what would happen with an AI if they became fully aware. Like, it's really cool, and it's creepy, and it's a good film. If you missed it in the theater, go watch it.
Is this a film with just four people in it?
Yeah, that's correct.
I've heard amazing things about it, but I can't see it until next year because I refuse to see any films featuring Star Wars cast before the Star Wars film comes out.
You've got a lot of weird rules.
Oh my God. You're beginning to sound more and more like my fiance all the time.
Oh my God, this is awesome.
Has she actually said those words? You have a lot of weird rules.
Yeah,
he's like Steve Guttenberg's character in Diner with the Baltimore Colts. Like, she must know the Colts fight song in order for her to get married. She's like, if she doesn't know where Tatooine is, then
she definitely knows where Tatooine is.
Okay, good. Okay, good. I would hate to have to call off that wedding.
On the same week.
I know. That'd be weird.
It Follows. Now, this is a horror movie I didn't get a chance to see, but Neil saw it, and there's a review on the site over it. Now, it actually
Neil's
got
in the
really
garage
decent
right
reviews.
Now.
Yeah, yeah. He's here. He's helping
quietly
us out.
Quietly watching.
So, quick, Neil, what did you think of It Follows?
It's great. It's a really good, creepy, full of dread. You should see it.
Creepy, full of dread.
Creepy, full of dread, which is, again, something that your fiance has said.
Yeah. Right. That's how she described my review of Jurassic World.
So the interesting thing now is a lot of the more creative and more compelling work in sci-fi and horror now has been indie films, like lower budget indie films, and with more modest, smaller budgets that people have to be more creative with. So, I mean, when's the last great studio horror movie that's come out?
Can't think of one.
Yeah. So check out It Follows. You know, a good double feature would be It Follows and The Babadook. See those together if you want a nice horror double feature. Check those out. Okay, Site Spotlight and the fan feedback. The reason I wanted to go through the Batman versus Superman trailer is there is a huge amount of feedback on the Facebook page. Everyone's got a different reaction. I think my favorite one was somebody that said, people are banging on this trailer just to suck up to Chris and Graham.
There was a healthy debate
on Twitter. I can assure you
that's
not the case. Our fans are very open-minded and will tell you their opinion, regardless of what we think.
There was a healthy debate, too, on Twitter when the trailer dropped. Vanessa Thomas was then very angry that the rumor about Ben Affleck getting to direct a one-off Batman and would he be good? And one person, I was like, gee, I don't know. And another person was like, you know, well, remember The Town and Argo and Gone Baby Gone and all this stuff. So
him, I'll give the benefit of the doubt.
I will give
directing.
The benefit of the doubt too. Actually, that could be interesting.
And if he doesn't put 50 other superheroes in it, you know, it might actually
make him put 50 other superheroes in it.
I'll just give you a funny little thing you just remind me with Ben Affleck and his relationship with Kevin Smith. You know, Kevin Smith went on the Star Wars set and maybe talked a little bit too much about his visit to the Star Wars set.
Oh, really?
Well, revenge is a dish served hot, ice cold. Because you know how we all left to go see the Star Wars concert?
Right.
6,500 people in Hall H.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Smith was the next panel.
Wow, that was not a coincidence. That was not a coincidence at all. That was J.J. Abrams going, oh, okay.
Keep your mouth shut next
he
time.
He saw him on the lineup and went, I'll spend $100,000 just to stick it to that
empty
guy.
Out his panel.
Yeah. Yeah. Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back, Return of the Jedi.
Ah, that's awesome. All right, what else?
Premiering this. Oh, the one thing I wanted to mention about the CFN iTunes store. If you go to itunes.com/CFN, one of the things you can do, let's say you already have a lot of the stuff that's already there or there's nothing you want, you could actually click through and go buy like a Barry Manilow CD or anything you want in the iTunes store. We'll still get credit for that sale.
Sweet.
So I wanted to let you guys know, even if you've already bought everything or there's nothing in the CFN iTunes store that you want right now, we will be changing the items, especially the movie reviews, but you can click through and buy whatever you want in iTunes. And
you do need to explain why you're buying Barry Manilow.
Yeah, that's true. Put it on the Facebook page.
Why you like Barry Manilow. Hashtag Barry Manilow. Yeah.
If anyone listening,
Mandy,
can't find anything they want on the iTunes store, can you just tweet me so I know you exist on the planet? There's a fair bit of entertainment up on that thing, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
And that includes apps too, like Jackie Cation. You just bought the Final Fantasy game app where it's like you pay like $60 and you get like Final Fantasy 1 through 6. All right. Together in a bundle, all remastered for the apps. Like anything like that, you can click through and purchase as well, and that would help us out. So thank you. And premiering this week, Ant-Man. Now, here's the thing about Ant-Man.
I can't decide.
I have to say, I'm like really, I have mixed feelings about it. I never liked the character in the comic books. I was never that interested in his character. I don't know how this movie looks. I'm really not sure. Maybe it'll be great. Maybe it'll be really funny. But I don't know. This is. I'm worried that we're starting to get like superhero fatigue. Where okay, we're gonna get a new character, a new origin story, and then he fights a villain, and then it's over, and then we'll see him in an Avengers movie.
Yeah,
there is a lot. I on the way back from Comic-Con, we're in traffic just as we got into Hollywood, and they've got the Fantastic Four billboards.
Yeah,
and I don't know if I'm projecting, but even the Fantastic Four look like they know this film's going to suck.
Yeah, I can't.
For sure, yeah.
I don't know. It's hard for me.
That's, again, where you're getting all the characters. I mean, they literally look like Muppet babies. You know, it's like this is 20 years before they would actually become scientists and, you know, in the Fantastic Four.
I don't know.
It looks awful.
But I saw before Jurassic Park or Jurassic World, before the darkness and the anger, the hate.
And
my fiance wouldn't let me boo at the end of Jurassic World. But they showed an extended Ant-Man trailer with some interviews, and it was sort of like Paul Rudd sort of introduced it to the audience on the screen. And I kind of think it's going to be this year's Guardians of the Galaxy, where it's something that's, you know, sort of a second level superhero comic book
that impresses people.
That is super funny. Like the bits they showed were so funny, and it's weird. It's coming out at the exact same time of the year that Guardians did last year. So I knew nothing about the Ant-Man, but bring him on.
That's a good, you know, I hope you're right.
I hope it does surprise
me the way Guardians did last year. Guardians was great. Mm-hmm. But
I remember when Guardians was first announced, too. I was like, oh, is this going to be
good? I hope so.
Made me a believer.
All right, Trainwreck. This is the Amy Schumer film we've talked about. I'm excited to see this because they're from the trailers, they're taking the old rom-com format but flipping it and making her the disaster that can't commit and sleeps around. So I think she's funny. I've seen all these New York comics in it, like Mike Birbiglia and others in the trailer. So I'm excited to see it. I think it's going to be funny.
Yeah, I saw the trailer too. I feel the same way. I kind of hope it is too, because I like the whole premise and the way everything's kind of switched around. And she's funny. So, and Judd Apatow directed it. So we'll see. I hope it's good.
Yeah, yeah. And Mr. Holmes, this is the Ian McKellen
Like, yeah, the aging Sherlock Holmes.
The actual Sherlock Holmes was like, no, I don't wear that hat.
Yeah,
or,
who's trying to correct the story of like all these movies and stuff has been made about me. This is how it really was.
It looks intriguing to me.
Yeah, it also looks very British, which it kind of has to be.
It'd be weird if it wasn't.
Well, you know, we've got a Sherlock here on network TV.
USA! Fuck yeah!
With a girl Watson. So here's the thing about this movie. I think it looks good too. It definitely looks intriguing. The problem is I'm wondering about timing. Are we a little Sherlock Holmesed out a little bit? You know, because
I can assure you, I am not.
Because we got the BBC show was fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, I love watching that show. And then we also, although it's been a little while since the Robert Downey Jr. ones, another non-Brit that played Sherlock Holmes. So I'm hoping it's good. I don't think I'm going to rush out to see it though. I'll probably definitely check this one out on a DVD. Although Neil is in the garage. He was just bragging that he went to a screening. He had tickets to a upcoming screening. And who's going to be at the screening, Neil?
Sherlock himself. Ian McKellen and Laura Linney.
Oh, nice. Laura Linney and Ian McKellen are going to be at the screening.
Yeah, just for Neil, which is weird.
That's screening it in his apartment.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that's our show.
Banged it out. It's over an hour.
An hour 10 we're clocking in right now. So, Steele, where can people find you and your podcast on the internet?
Okay. Well, I do two podcasts. One is called I Love Green Guide Letters, which you guys are going to be on very shortly.
Yes.
Yes.
really, really shortly. And we review the complaint letters to the Australian TV Guide, and it's super fun. And actually, BuzzFeed just did a story on the top 10 funniest podcasts in Australia. Number one. So that was pretty
nice.
Cool.
Oh, well, you guys did it at PodFest last year.
Yeah.
It's a great idea.
And my other podcast, which if you enjoyed me dribbling about Star Wars on this episode, I do a Star Wars podcast every week called Steel Wars. And it's kind of like Mark Maron's What the Fuck for Star Wars fans.
Right.
So it's sort of like a hopefully funny look at what people, we do long form interviews with Star Wars fans about what they love about it and how it sort of feeds into their life. And we've interviewed we just did one with Darren Hayes of Savage Garden.
Nice.
If you remember Savage Garden, he's a huge Star Wars fan, and we find out what happens when you grow up very poor and loving Star Wars, and then all of a sudden you become a millionaire and you're loving Star Wars.
Yeah.
You buy a lot of expensive Star Wars toys.
Buy a land speeder.
I'm gonna guess at least one pinball machine.
Arcade. He's got the got the old Atari Vector Graphics arcade at his house. And during Comic-Con, we do this really fun thing. I call it a blog pod, and I record little segments every day. And so we podcast it in the line. Just people, if I'm next to someone waiting in a queue, I'll just interview them and stuff. So we're just on to our third day. And so it's like you're with me at Comic-Con, but you have to do exactly what I want to do.
Nice.
And so there'll be we podcasted from inside Hall H and then from the party and then afterwards. So it's super fun, and we're getting really good feedback on that. So check that out at steelwars.com.
Nice. And you're going to be doing one of those shows at the LA PodFest. Which one have you decided? We don't know yet.
Oh, no, we're doing I Love Green Guide Letters.
All right. I Love Green Guide Letters will be at this year's LA PodFest, September 18th through the 20th. And of course, we'll hopefully you're going to be in Melbourne watching on December 17th. All right, guys, I'm in headlining the Improv in Las Vegas this week, July 14th through 19th. And then we'll be at the KC. I'll be in Tulsa with Doug Benson July 26th. The KC Improv with Doug Benson August 14th, and Zanies in Rosemont August 16th. And then the Improv in wonderful Lake Tahoe, August 19th through 23. And of course, and then headlining the Hollywood Improv August 29th. Check those out. And LAPodFest.com.
It's coming up.
We're booking. We just booked. Who did we just Can we announce those shows we just locked in?
Yeah, we did My Brother and Me and Adventure Zone.
Nice. Nice. So we're filling it up, guys. Just check back to lapodfest.com. Thank you once again to Steele and also Neil Weekly.
Yes, helping out in the office.
Our corner guest. My name is Graham Elwood.
And I'm Chris Mancini. And as always, remember,
Han shot first.
Greedo didn't even shoot!